among all the changes in the history of the church and of the world, it is, in a sense, kind of comforting to see that there are some constants in this whole process. As clearly apparent in the church, ecclesiastical ambition is a constant. It goes all the way back to James and John asking for preferment here. Okay, that's ambition. If we were to somehow get rid of ambition, the University of Western Ontario would have to shut down, as would most of the world. But in the church, the nefarious consequences of ambition are even clearer. Ambition takes hold of a person only at the expense of somebody else. It's, I believe, as simple as that. Ambition as it's normally understood. I mean, there is a different kind of ambition. Paul talks about be ambitious for the higher gifts. But the higher gifts in Paul's reading is not a sense of privilege for one person or another. Rather, it's the greater capacity to love. So what's wrong with this? Or even better question, why? What underlies our passion to be in line ahead of somebody else? I think, in my case, and maybe everybody's case, it's a basic sense of uncertainty and insecurity about who I am and where I belong in the world. And therefore, I can always locate myself in the world if I can say, well, look behind me. They see somebody else there, look sideways to see where the competition is running. And of course, the consequences, as I said, the nefarious consequences of that is that it simply creates a hierarchy between people and therefore makes community impossible. It simply does. That's why this wonderfully stark reading in Mark, and it's all over the Gospels, all of the Gospels, lays this out with such a terrifying clarity. The one who wants to be first must be the servant of all. I don't think that's, hyperbole. I really don't think Jesus was trying to speak in hyperbole here. I think he was laying it out. That's exactly as it is. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. It's fairly shattering, I think, as I've been mulling over this all week, to read these texts, then to look at myself, and to look at the world, above all the world of the church. The church which is supposed to be the light of the world, the salt of the earth. And we're not, I don't think. I think we're indistinguishable to a very large extent. From business as usual, politics as usual, as we see it practiced all over. But the whole genius of Jesus is precisely to illumine all those dark spaces in us that are afraid, that are insecure, that are worried about status and position. And have them brought to light. Because most of the time it's so normal. It's so bloody normal. We just take the status quo as what ought to be, not just what is. And what Jesus does is say, this ought not to be. This ought not to be, because you're excluding other people. You're making it possible to connect with other human beings to the extent that you do this. As I've been saying the last couple of weeks, there is no two-tier morality. There is no two-tier set of ethics in the church. Or it's not supposed to be, For the good ones, and for the high-class ones, for the preferred ones, and then for the hoi polloi. It is not supposed to work that way. So what is the problem? Well, as I said, the sense of insecurity, but also the costliness of doing this, which is why I presume they chose one of these servant readings from Isaiah. The death of the self that seeks preferment is precisely that, the death of the self. And death is never pain-free. And I think this, too, illumines the resistance in us to the sense of preferment. Last night I watched a small film biography of Albert Schweitzer. He's an astonishing man. I hope everybody knows who Schweitzer was. One of the great Bach interpreters of the 20th century, wrote a couple of absolutely pivotal texts in theology, and then left it all, became a medical doctor, went to the Congo, disappeared for all practical purposes. I'm really glad I watched it because it cast all kinds of light on it. I mean, he became nobody. This massively important central figure in European culture, in European theology, European music, disappeared. And the only way I can make sense of that, either for Albert Schweitzer or for myself, is a profoundly deeper sense that I am in God's hands, and God is still in charge of the world and reality. With Schweitzer, it came to his notion of reverence for life, where he saw himself with the hippopotamuses and the coconut trees and everybody else continuous with all of life. We don't have that. I mean, the world of nature is our kicks closet, which we can regularly raid to our own benefit. But I think there is something in Schweitzer's sense of his personal sense of continuity with the rest of all life that was enormously helpful for him to be the servant that Jesus talked about. So, here we are, dragged, kicking, and screaming to the gates of mystery, the mystery of God's love for us and the mystery of our resistance, our fearful resistance to that, or our incapacity or lack of desire to seek that love. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. That kind of generosity, that's what this whole thing is about. And it's to that radical sort of generosity that we're called by the gospel. And I don't see how you can in any way diminish the very sharp edges of that call.